Sabrina George, New Comedy Radio, Part 3, with Jill Edwards, talking about... because the other subject which I think's fascinating with comedy is there is a club comedy, there's a show comedy, there is a friends mucking around with each other in the pub comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And some people get that very confused.
Ah, yes, they do, don't they? Mucking around the pub with your friends, entirely different, because it has no rules, there's no audience morality. What happens when someone becomes an audience in a club is that they develop an audience morality, and everybody wants to be seen to be following it. So one of the most interesting things is if you watch a comic on stage say the word black, at the moment, the entire audience will break out into kind of, yeah, white liberal middle class funk, I can't often call it, because they just, oh God, they so wish that they hadn't said it. Now, if you're in a pub and someone says it, and it's just one of your mates, it's really not, you know, it's kind of, it's amongst your mates. There's no stakes or stuff. It's, you're not an audience, you're a group of friends, and you'll have your own in jokes. Everything is up for grabs. There are no guidelines. It's not a profession. As such, it's once you get into the clubs that there is some kind of structure then. There's the root of stand-up comedy, this genre of it. Also, when you're talking to your mates in the pub, there's no genre. You're not thinking about working a particular genre of comedy. It's just you and your mates who create your own little comedy circuit, really, don't you? The same gang of mates that have got the same in-jokes and all the rest of it, those will be your own circuit, so the rules within your own circuit will have been established between you all. Whereas a club, if you're in a comedy club, the rules of the circuit as such, there are no rules, but the guidelines of the circuit as such have been established long before you've arrived in that club. And the audience will, in the main, adhere to them, or instinctively adhere to them. And then the show, the one-man show, I think what's interesting about the one-man show is it has elements of the audience knowing what guidelines are and what you would normally do in a club. But I think there's that sense of, well, it's just me and you. It's the comic kind of going, it's just us now. We can actually, to an extent, create our own little morality. You know, that's what I think happens. That's what the differences are. And if everyone's gone to see a particular style of comic, they will already inherently know what to expect. Therefore, there's an agreement already between the audience and the comic as to what's okay and what's not. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, because it's something, again, that I think is relatively common, is that, and it's generally a bloke, the funny one of the group says, I can do that, gets up on stage. And if he hasn't brought his mates along, they frequently address total silence from the audience.
Yeah.
And well, be completely that's bewildered.
The difference between being able to make your friends laugh and being able to be a comic, that's completely different. Absolutely, totally different. I think a really bizarre example, it's like knitting a jumper for your friend and selling jumpers commercially in a shop. It's only like any other thing, but it's a completely different thing.
Mm.
You're not amongst your friends in the pub. They don't care whether your setups are too long or too short. They already think you're funny.
Yeah.
You know, once you stand up on stage. I think the main thing that people don't quite realise is they may make their friends laugh, brilliant, but what they have to actually learn, if they're going to stand on a stage, is to be a comic. That's different.
And part of that is connecting with a bunch of complete strangers who don't know you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And also how to structure that material so that that group of strangers that don't know you can hear it. That's the great thing about structure. It creates people being able to hear your comedy.
Yeah.
If you weighed it down with loads of words, they can't hear it. If your setup's too long and rambly, the audience can't hear them. It's essentially, I think it's a different language. So, I mean, I tend to teach setup punch as a language.
Yes.
It's like any other language that you learn. It's, if you feel uncomfortable talking in it at first, it takes a while to understand all the rules of it, and initially you sound very stilted and you get things a bit wrong. But with time, you become fluent, and then you sound fluent in the language. Now, that's the difference.
Yeah.
In a pub and on a stage, you've got to learn a different language to go on stage.
Because another common question I get is hecklers, aren't you? Which is one of the biggest fear things that people who aren't, well, even some comics are frightened of hecklers, but not for very long. But it's again one of the things that I think you told me about ages ago, which I find so true, is there are various categories of hecklers, and the ones that I constantly, I would say, the drunk who forgets where they are and what they're doing, is challenging, but not in a fearful way. You're just like, oh, how annoying.
Yeah.
But the other one is the one who thinks they're funny and wish and think that they should be on stage. And I would say, as a woman, that is often the most. The alpha male in the group is the one that wants to take you on. And they're often the one that is considered funny amongst their mates or whatever it might be. Yeah. And there are ways of handling it.
Yeah, which is most specifically not to be aggressive.
As a woman, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think for anyone personally, if you're taking on the alpha male, there isn't any point being aggressive, because if you're aggressive back, they will be aggressive back, and they've provoked the fight they were looking for. A heckler is just some sad fuck who's desperate for attention. I mean, there's nothing sadder than sitting in a group of people paying money to watch comedy and then shouting all the way through it.
So what do you tell your comics on how to approach
You know, it's interesting because they're always very scared of it. And when I run new act nights, so at the end of the course, there's a new act night each term, and the compere will always be someone who's very good at comparing for new act shows with experience of it. I'll always get the compere to say, please don't heckle them because they're new acts, and, you know, give them a chance and stuff. But what happens is that they get so excited, the audience tends to get so excited, and I think it's partly because there are friends and families there and stuff, all nervous for their particular relative. What we've noticed with new act nights, and just what I've been discussing with the compere lately, is that the audience gets terribly overexcited and they start joining in, which isn't actually heckling, it's joining in. So they're not meaning to actually upset the comic or to heckle them, they've just got so overexcited they can't help speaking. And it's a very different thing, and I usually explain that to the students, and I've noticed that the students handle it really well. Because they're expecting it, they know it might happen. I say, I can't stop people heckling, but try and bear in mind they're not actually heckling. They've just got overexcited and joined in. And the main thing I've always taught them is just don't be aggressive. Mm. If you hear the heckle, if you can think of something, the easiest thing to do is to just, not to ignore the heckle, but just something like, thanks for sharing that, great. And just move on, just diffuse it. A thanks quite often works. You can't always hear the heckle, don't always know where it's come from. And if you just do something like smile in that direction and just go, thanks, they tend to just not bother because they just look really confused. I've seen their faces, they just kind of sit back and think, Because there's no aggression, there's no repeat aggression. The heckler's kind of, if the heckler has said something a bit aggressive, there's no fight coming back, there's just a thanks. And a thank you for sharing that with us can then make the audience laugh. I think it needs to be, when you deal with the heckle, very simple, very short, doesn't have to be funny, really doesn't have to be funny. It can just be a thanks, it can just be a yeah, thanks for sharing with that, It's nothing, definitely no stock heckle put down lines. No, and no huge aggressiveness, none of the kind of, whoa, what do you do for a job? Then we'll fuck off and go and do that again. You know, no. All the aggressiveness stuff, the audience will lose, the audience will not like the comic who's being really aggressive. And quite often, I don't think, what happens is, a new act is heckled, and they get incredibly aggressive, and the person's just joined in. They've just got a bit excited and says, oh, that's great. And the person's gone, yeah, you fuck off. And the audience is just like, oh my God. However you don't feel it, you are perceived as being the one with the power. And that's one of the hardest things to get new acts to realise. They're standing on stage with a microphone in a spotlight, if it's a club that has those three things, which, you know, sometimes it is. They are perceived as being the person with the power. If they are excessively nasty to a heckler, the audience will think, oh, that's not fair. Because they're the one with the power. They've got the microphone and everything, and they're being mean. I think the thing is, you've got to remember that likability is so important. You have to retain your likability. And it's not necessary to say that much. If someone does an amazing heckle, and it's hilarious, and let's face it, that's going to happen once in your entire career, you're ever going to hear an amazing heckle. If there's an amazing heckle, you've got to give it to the heckler. You've got to go, yeah, brilliant, give them a round of applause. And when they start again, just go, okay, that's enough now, thanks very much, you've got one round of applause. So the other thing, when they get, once they've got beyond the point where they can't, where they can begin to talk to the audience, I always think, just relax with hecklers. The first thing I say to them to do is, if they hear a voice come out of the darkness, take a breath and smile. And embrace that challenge as a moment in which you're about to start learning how to deal with hecklers. Because every time you have to deal with them, you are going to be learning how to deal with them. So you've got to embrace it. You've just got to go for it. And if you smile, the heckler will go, oh. If you look panicked and stutter and get aggressive, the heckler's won.
Yeah.
But if you take a deep breath and smile, there's just a moment where the heckler thinks, oh, I think it, oh, hang on. People, I find that, I think people are most unnerved by you smiling at aggression. It's unnerving. So if hecklers are really hard and horrible, if you've got someone who just won't leave it alone, you do your best.
Mm.
Remember your sense of humour? You are a comic. Do your best, and if you can't get that heckler to shut up, it's unlikely that anybody else has got them to shut up either. And I think a good booker chucks hecklers out. I personally always do.
Mm.
If I've got a really tough, hardened heckler that is really wrecking the show, I'll chuck them out. Physically, myself.
I've done that too.
Yeah, I just won't put up with it because
that's... Early training as a bouncer.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? That's one of the things. As a woman running clubs, you think, okay, well, I've got to do this. I've actually frog marched someone through double doors and kicked them open as I threw them out. I just thought, God, what am I doing? But my protective instinct over the night and over the comic on stage was strong enough for me to do that.
Yeah.
There's one other thing you can do with heckles initially, which is really common, which is the thing of asking the person to repeat it. So you can pretend you haven't heard it, even if you have, and just say, oh, say it again. And when the heckler says the comment again, it's not going to be funny the second time because everyone's laughed the first time. If it's one of those where the audience laughed.
Well, this is again something that I think as an MC, which I do a lot of, I have a lot more leeway.
Oh, yeah.
Because
MCs have to be brilliant at it.
You have to be brilliant at it, and I would say one of the commonest mistakes is misjudging the joining in for the real heckle.
Yeah, definitely.
And I would say the real heckle happens about once in every 50-100 gigs.
Yeah, I think it's very unreal.
The joining in is enormous, and I actually take it on board that if somebody is joining in, they're so with you, they're so in the moment, they've so forgotten themselves, that it's actually an enormous compliment.
Yeah.
So if someone said, oh, I did that once as well, or, oh, that's, I live next door, or whatever it might be, you sit there and go, fantastic, acknowledge it. And generally, they will suddenly get slightly embarrassed and go, oh. But they actually then reform the group even stronger.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I have a real heckler, which is, as I say, very, very rare, and again, even the big name comics when I'm emceeing them, I try and set it up and say, you know, if you really have something to say about something, say it when I'm on stage, not when the comics are on stage. Even though I know that a lot, but going back to the setup punch format of 5 minutes, it's something that I think is part of the fear factor, is if you've got 5 minutes of tightly honed setup punch where every second counts, somebody heckles, they're actually interfering with your rhythm, your timing, your persona that you've created and everything else, and to break out of that or to stop that then completely unnerves the comic.
They're
suddenly like, where am I? What bit of material have I got to drop to catch up on time?
You need to learn it well enough to know. You need to know your material well enough. You can just throw a thanks in their direction and carry on, but just never... If you've just done a setup and they've heckled before the punchline, you are going to have to scrap that gag because they'll heckle in the same place again. But you need to be able to just chuck out some kind of smile and a thanks and just carry on as if it's just... Yeah, thanks, acknowledged it, irrelevant, carrying on. And if you seriously get bound up with the heckler for too long, then yeah, you're going to have to cut to your last topic and get off. But I think the thing is not to be afraid of it. The main thing is to embrace it.
Yeah.
Okay, here we come. I'm going to embrace this as a challenge. Because if you take that attitude, they can see it. If you're standing there going, right, smiling, ready for it, okay. The heckler's like, oh, fuck, hello. I'm not sure about this, actually. But if you suddenly, all your material disappears out and you start stuttering and don't know where you are, you're the target. They'll just carry on. It's a lot of it's down to attitude, I think. I don't remember ever really being heckled particularly. A bit. But
no, I would say that heckling, the heckling that I've received has been deserved. It's because I have been. There was one which, you know, will go down in history as one of the worst gigs I ever did. And I was working nights. I woke up at 7, I was on stage at 8, there was no MC, I had to go into a, you know, and here's the first act, and it was me, and I just stood there like I wasn't a rabbit, because I wasn't frightened at all, it was completely the opposite, I wasn't still really in bed mentally, I was fast asleep, and I heard from the back of the room, you're dying, love, and I just smiled, and I went, yeah, I know, but I'm going to finish, and there was some of the audience just stayed with me, because
you said yes,
but I was dying.
Yeah,
I was dying.
But the most important thing when you're dying is to acknowledge that you are dying.
Yeah.
Because then the audience will give you a second chance. That's the moment where you have a second chance. Where if someone says something, you just go, yeah, I know. I remember only a couple of times when, as a double act, we had a few times when we we were dying. We had a particular night. We'd gone on after the most unbelievable bill at the Banana. There was, we'd gone on after Joe Brand, Hattie Heyridge, David Baddiel, and they'd stormed, all three of them had stormed, and we were supposed to be closing the show. And the audience were exhausted. They'd seen three amazing acts, and we'd come bouncing on as the music act. You know, we were going to close the show. And I think we were a bit nervous from what I remember, thinking, geez, we just thought these kings of comedy, we've got to go, ah. And we came bouncing on, and we did the whole of our first song to silence. And we'd always stormed at the Banana, always. And we just did the first song to silence. And I thought, there's no point in going on, but we need to address it. And I just kind of stopped, and I looked at Andy, the booker, who was standing, and Andy Waring used to run the Banana Comedy Club, he was standing at the back of the room, and I just said, Andy, we don't appear to be doing that well. And he went, yeah, I know, that's really odd, because normally you do really well. So the audience were watching this conversation, and I said, tell you what, let's ask them. And I just said to the audience, all right, then, what's happening? What's going on? And somebody stood up and said, could you just go off and start again? And I went, all right, fine. And we went off, and Andy had to come running down from the back, did our introduction again, we came back on, and it absolutely stormed. And I've still got no idea why that worked, but the audience said it like it was, and we actually ended up doing two encores. It's the oddest thing, and I sometimes think if you got to the stage where you're comfortable enough to do it, just ask the audience what's wrong.
Yeah.
Because they'll be able to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, take the risk, you're dying anyway.
Yeah.
You may as well just say, what's up? And you'd be surprised by sometimes what they'll say. It can be really helpful.
Yeah.
This audience just needed a breather. They needed an interval, really, I think.
Yeah.
So, oh, just, could you just come on again? So we weren't quite ready for
it. We've had enough bounciness, thank you very much.
We just need a bit of a breather. Oh. Give us a warning. And we went and we did exactly the same song and they laughed all the way through. It was very peculiar.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is about not being afraid and not assuming it's you. What I've noticed with new comics, and I watched one of my students do this recently, they come on, it doesn't go as well as they thought it should. They realise they're dying and you can see them thinking, oh my God, I'm crap, I'll never be a comic, why did I ever think I could do this? I will never, ever, ever do another good gig again, I'm dying. And you can see it happening. And that is completely, that's not true. If one gig doesn't go very well and you're dying, it just means that something's happened. It doesn't mean that you're a crap comic or that you won't be a great comic. It means that something in your act or your performance or in the room just isn't working. And that's okay. If you stop and just think, okay, this isn't working, 9 times out of 10, I would say the comic's dying. If they're a very new act, slow down.
Mm.
Take a deep breath and slow down. Mm. Quite often you'll find that the audience goes, oh, with you. Because you've just been going too fast because you're nervous.
Mm.
And it's just about just embracing that challenge, not standing there thinking, oh my God, my entire career that I dreamed about is over. It's not.
Mm.
Stakes aren't that high when you're new.
I know, well, they were high for me, and I think there were lots of things. I mean, now I wouldn't go, I would have pulled out and said, sorry, I'm too unwell or something. It was just ridiculous. Mm. My head, and I think this goes back to something which I think is quite, well, in my case and in observation, quite crucial for comics, is actually to have yourself mentally alert enough to know what's going on. And if you're drunk on drugs, still asleep in your head.
No.
Something incredibly upsetting has happened the minute before you go on stage.
So then you know the reason why you died.
I knew the reason I died.
Yeah, so it's fine.
And I was fine with it, but I went backstage and one of the other senior comics said, I can't believe that's the worst dying I've ever seen. If I had been you, I would have crawled under the carpet to the back of the building and gone home.
No.
And I just thought this was a very strange thing to say. And I said, but I want to see X, Y, and Z.
Because quite often comics don't speak to the person who's died. It's that weird, weird thing that happens that one person dies and no one speaks to them, as if in some way it's catching.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you've got to hold your head up high. I watched a student of mine a couple of years ago dying up the creek, which I think many, many people have done. And he died with such dignity. It was wonderful. It wasn't working. They were not going to go for him. But he did that wonderful thing of just saying, okay, I'm going to go now, but thanks very much. And he left with his head held up really high, and they cheered. And I thought, excellent. So the booker's happy because he's not left the audience unhappy. He's not stayed on there and let, you know, he's just gone off. Dignity, looked dignified, everyone's clapped. We're all fine. You deserve to die with dignity.
Fantastic. And on that note, thanks very much, Jim Edwards.
You're welcome.